Normal Town Council member Stan Nord questioned whether the town should be a member of the Chamber of Commerce at the Monday night meeting, raising the idea that it represents a conflict of interest. We'll talk about that and other issues with Mayor Pro Tem Kevin McCarthy. Council member, thanks for joining us.
Hello. Glad to be here, Charlie.
And Stan Nord said the town should probably not be a member of a body that asks the town for money, as the chamber recently did for workforce development. Do you agree?
Well, I think, you know, a little bit of context there is, you know, the claim was conflict of interest. And I think, you know, Mr. Nord is the only one that believes that there's actually a conflict of interest. And it stems from conflating a couple of things. But first, we have to, you know, level set that, you know, the PAC, the Political Action Committee, is not the Chamber of Commerce. They're separate structures, separate legal entities, separate boards of directors, and that he was describing activities that the PAC does versus activities that the Chamber does. The town is only a member in the Chamber of Commerce, and the only funding beyond being a business member of the Chamber of Commerce is an initiative that they do on behalf of the entire community, which is workforce development. So it's really important to be very crisp about what that financial investment is in the chamber and why, from a legal perspective, there is no conflict of interest.
So legally, there's no conflict of interest with the PAC, but the chamber itself and its wholly owned subsidiary 501c3 organization that manages Compact. The McLean County Compact, that manages the workforce development piece, is asking for money.
Absolutely.
So is that an improper participation by the town in a group then?
I don't see any will on the council other than Mr. Nord to view it in that way. I think, you know.
Why do you reject his logic then?
Well, there's a philosophical discussion and then there's a practical discussion here, right? So philosophically, then should we be investing in any of the myriad of other organizations, the Economic Development Council, the Convention and Visitor Bureau? You know, so what makes an appropriate investment? So, the town is historically, long before I've ever showed up on the scene and currently, invests in a number of initiatives to support activities that support the community. And the chamber is an example of that. And specifically, Ms. Reese made the comment last night, and it's very true. The town is one of the largest employers in Normal. And as a thriving business, being a member of the Chamber of Commerce that supports business growth and business development in our community is A, desirable, B, a good example of what we want our thriving businesses and our community to do.
But should taxpayer money be spent on something that you'd be doing anyway? The town has an interest in the business community. Mr. Nord is certainly on board that. Why does a membership in the Chamber of Commerce matter? I mean, the town is going to be engaging in business promotion activities and engaging with stakeholders that promote the business community anyway as part of the business of the town. So why do that if you're already doing the work?
Yeah, I think, again, general versus specific. So the town of Normal doesn't do what the Chamber of Commerce does specifically, right? We operate and arguably maybe we don't even do the greatest job of marketing ourselves as a community. Traditionally, municipalities don't do very good jobs of that.
Always a matter for discussion.
Yeah. Always a matter of discussion. And so those specific activities, nobody within the town of Normal actually does what the chamber does. So we get to leverage that and being a good standing member of the Chamber of Commerce, we're also get to participate with other businesses and market ourselves within our own community as attracting potential employees, potential stability of our employment base, be able to partner with other organizations within our community to do the things we do to make sure that we're investing in other businesses if appropriate for what the town needs to get done. So those are just a few reasons, but it's smart to invest in your own business community if you're a business and if you're a municipality.
Is it really a meaningful investment in the chamber, though? A membership is just a few thousand dollars, right? for the town. Isn't it for a tax, for a municipal body that spends taxpayer money, it seems more of a symbol than anything else.
Well, I think that, you know, 2.1, you're right. It's, you know, for the listening audience, it's not a lot of money that we're talking about here. And so, but is it symbolic? Yes and no. Part of your investment on behalf of the town and the chamber is the few thousand dollars, to your point. It's symbolic that the town supports the business community for sure. But, you know, when council members show up to chamber events, it's because we're members. It's also showing the business community that the normal town council cares about the business community, and that we're invested as council, we're invested as a community.
When, in your view, both legally and philosophically, does conflict of interest actually arise with another organization?
Well, you know, I stopped short of getting a law degree, so maybe,
maybe you should stick to the philosophical.
I'm going to stick to the philosophical, and I'm going to let the city attorney judge the legal ramifications of that. But and I know the PAC question has been the subject of a varying levels of court cases. So far, our city attorney tells me what we're doing is perfectly legal, and the city of Bloomington also invests in the chamber and many, many other communities that I've visited on benchmarking, community benchmarking trips, also invest heavily in their business community and their chambers of commerce for both philosophical and symbolic and practical reasons that we've already talked about.
But when can a conflict arise in any broad context, not necessarily chamber related, and how should municipalities manage that potential?
Well, certainly all of that has to happen on a case by case basis, right? So, as a council member, first and foremost, I'm always gonna, any decision that even looks like there may be some conflict between financial gain and lobbying, right, that our town legal advisor is in the mix, any of those type of decisions, if it even smells like there might be a conflict of interest. And so, you know, when this arose, of course, Ms. Reese immediately looked to the town attorney to say, hey, where are we on this? And to be clear, there was certainly some I was made aware that there was some email traffic back and forth between Mr. Nord and Ms. Reese about the question. It was made clear ahead of schedule, ahead of the meeting, that, you know, there was no conflict of interest, and legal counsel had looked at it and assured us that there was no legal. So case-by-case basis, certainly involving the legal counsel when any questions like that arise. But it's really financial gain and lobbying, those two things.
So the Illinois Municipal League has a lobbyist in Springfield to cover its city's interests, and the town is a member of the Illinois Municipal League and pays attention to what that lobbyist tracks in legislation. Is that a conflict?
I wouldn't think so, again. Not having that law degree, as far as I know, we don't have one, and so I think the difference is the direction of the lobbying, right? And I know there's been questions about that on the federal level, what should and shouldn't be allowed. Again, I'm not going to wade into the legal argument because I'm not qualified to. But as far as I understand, no, that's not.
Is Councilmember Stan Nord likely to get the Chamber of Commerce's endorsement again?
You know, that's a really excellent question for the Chamber of Commerce Political Action Committee and how they feel about the subject.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Kevin McCarthy of the Normal Town Council, Mayor Pro Tem, who sat in for Mayor Chris Koos last night and ran the meeting. The National Bureau of Economic Research is a think tank. It's nonpartisan. It's been around since 1920. Very, very wonky, heavy on Ivy League economics professors in producing its studies. A new one suggests that economic impact of tax incentives is pretty minimal at the state and local level. So, for instance, the study finds in 2014, states spent between $5 and $216 per capita on incentives for firms in the form of firm-specific subsidies and general tax credits. That's mostly targeting investment, job creation, and research and development. So that amounted to 40% nearly of state corporate tax revenue for a typical state. That seems a lot for what the study alleges is a minimal return. Does that suggest anything to you?
It suggests first I probably need to read that study. I'm aware of it and been able to just glance at it out in depth, but you know, without having read it, one of the upsides of research is it tells us kind of the state of things, but one of the downsides of research always is the things that perform well get mixed in with the things that perform poorly, and then we call average either good or bad. And so I think economic incentives have to be looked at on a case-by-case basis. And you know, we're throwing in, when we say economic incentives, we're talking about a whole host of different things. I think you have to really be able to tease out. But staying with the philosophical in this conversation, I think, you know, dollars and cents, sometimes that's not the ultimate criteria, so that there's some measurable dollar outcome. Ultimately, yes. So philosophical point one, where are we going with economic incentives?
What does it have to pay for?
Right.
In your book.
So first and foremost, I guess, let me come out and say that, you know, I think it would be a better world if there were no economic incentives at all, right? Just we were able to attract businesses by the community assets and the investments we've made here locally in our own community that line up with value. Two, attraction strategies are really, really difficult in economic development. I'm certainly not an expert in this topic, but getting an Amazon to show up or finding a company like Rivian is a very, very low percentage shot. There's, I believe, some 30-ish automotive plants in the United States that closed, and maybe one or two have reopened as car producing plants. That is a very, very low chance of happening. And so that happened by a couple of things, right? We happen to have a really well-maintained automotive plant here, and we happen to come across a group that needed an automotive plant. The state of Illinois was very interested and offered up some incentives. And taking a risk. Was that going to pay off? We didn't know. Now, comfortable retrospect of a few years and several $1 billion of investment in the company from the likes of Amazon and T. Rowe Price and Ford Motor.
Looking like a little better bet at this point.
It's looking like that's probably a better bet, but you know, is 1,000 jobs worth it? Is the ancillary businesses that are going to come around Rivian and add jobs and revenue to the community worth it?
Worth a couple $3 million that the local area is putting into the kitty.
Right. Well, the town of Normal is putting one, but they have to do $40 million of investment, right, and they have to generate 1,000 jobs. And so for us, that kind of economic structure was based on performance. You perform, you get economic incentive. You don't perform, you don't get economic incentive.
So here's the thing. You mentioned earlier that in a perfect world, you wouldn't have to, because the community would sell itself. And there, in this study by the Bureau of Economic Research, it kind of indicates that there's something to that, that economically underperforming areas in rural areas had to kick in a whole bunch more than urban areas and areas with high-performing economies do to attract businesses. So the rich get richer. Philosophically, that's not how entirely how you want it.
Yeah, so, you know, it's interesting. I had the opportunity to visit Greenville, South Carolina. And if you were to visit Greenville, South Carolina, in their urban district 30 years ago, nobody would want to live there. Well, I shouldn't say that. Very few residents, you know, citizens actually lived in their downtown district. The city of Greenville invested heavily in their infrastructure, also in attraction strategies. If you go there now, they have a substantial BMW plant with a number of OEM manufacturers all around that. And now businesses are flocking to Greenville because it's a hub. So, but how did you get there? How did they get to the place where that self-sustained and self-generated? Where was the spark that generated that thrive that attracted businesses without?
Do the Greenville locals have an idea where that spark was?
Well, the current mayor wrote a book about how it happened, so I've only got about halfway through that. But to be clear, most people in ED, economic development, will look at a place like Greenville and call it a success and say that the job growth, the revitalization, the infill, all the work that they did there is successful. I don't know how that would be ranked in this study, but again, that's what I'm talking about. The challenge of a study like that is that Greenville gets lumped in with small communities that weren't successful and didn't thrive like Greenville, and then they get called average.
Yeah. To be fair, the study is a lot more nuanced than do it or don't do
okay.
it. The study indicates that there is often not a connection between, not a close connection between incentives and equity gains in the community.
Absolutely.
And that's a lesson for places like the town. How?
Well, I think that...
To connect that, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. So, you know, before my time, Uptown Normal was not a place that anybody was hanging out or there was really thriving businesses. And so they set up a TIF district, which and some facade grants and small business loans, a number of incentives. And today it's a center, a quality of life place that most residents of Bloomington and Normal and the surrounding communities like to be. And so the council ID'd a district in our community that was blighted and going south, was not positively impacting our community.
And that's something else, that it's not strictly a dollars, jobs kind of thing. Sometimes a municipality has an interest in saying, I want it here.
Absolutely. And that's where what my comment was earlier. Sometimes it's not all about the dollars and cents. Constitution Place in North Normal was also a TIF district. And so there wasn't much services. There was an Eagle grocery store for a while, but it's no longer there. So if you think about all of the residences up there, the people that live up there, there's virtually no grocery except but for Schnucks in that development. Now there's some healthcare. Now there's a little bit of retail. There's food. There's entertainment now between the theater and the trampoline park. There's a bunch of things now in Economic Center because the town of Normal invested in that district. And now all the families that live around that area have a place to shop, have some entertainment, have some restaurants, have some healthcare options, all right there and within a much closer proximity than traveling all the way or halfway across the town to get it.
Kevin McCarthy is mayor pro tem. That means he's the most senior council member, though he may take issue with the word senior. He ran the meeting last night. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Charlie. Always a pleasure.
I'm Charlie Schlenker. We speak with the mayors of Bloomington and Normal following most council meetings. This is 89.1 and WGLT.org.